Hello.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, my friends. It is I, Alejandro, and I am excited to talk to you all, as usual. Holy moly. You know what? I'll admit to you, I just had to run in the door. Big accident on the highway. I don't even understand what happened. There's like two semis. Luckily, it looked like just the trailers were damaged, but they were like destroyed. One, the whole top is gone, and the other, the trailer's like, I don't know how or what. It's a mystery. Were they somehow, I don't know what happened, but it had to be paranormal phenomena, I think. No, luckily I am safe and everything is well, and the traffic is all cleared up for those of you who are listening live on the I-10, that once you get past Elliott, you're going to be all right. But it's great to talk to you all today because I have a special show. And you know, you guys know, I don't do a lot of patting myself on the back and talking about how great I am or how great this show. Well, I talk about how great the show is. I think it's a lot of fun. But that's because of the great guests. And that's my whole point, is that, wow, you know, I really was it. Sometimes I just sit back and think it's really cool how it's just keeping busy in this field, getting to know people and talking with people, that there are so many incredible people to talk to out there. And today is no different. I mean, the last two shows, how cool is that? Navajo Rangers. I mean, these guys are trained by the feds. They're really, you know, federal law enforcement in charge of a state-sized sovereign nation in that spans several states. And they're doing, you know, paranormal investigations. They're like, hey, man, people call us. They say UFO, and they want us to check it out. We're going to roll, and we're going to check it out. It was wonderful to have those guys. But luckily, and completely due to Leslie Kane, the author of the book UFOs, Generals, Pilots, I always get it mixed up who's first, the generals, the pilots. Generals, pilots, and government officials go on the record. And she is going to Chile, and they have pretty much announced her as the American representative for CEFAA. And that's how you say it, the A. You say both A's, CEFAA, which sounds kind of cool. Maybe our FAA should do that. Well, they go FAA, but it would be like FAA. Our FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, regardless. CEFAA, which is the Committee of Studies of Anomalous Aerial Phenomena for Chile. They're actually a branch of Chile's FAA. So, you know, this is an official organization. You all mostly know that the head of this organization, General Bermudez, had come to the UFO Congress and shown some video, one of their great cases. And that kind of caused a stir, especially when Leslie Kane wrote an article about that. She wrote a couple, actually. And we're going to talk a little bit about that because Leslie Kane's going to be on the phone and she's going to be joining us. However, we're going to have Jose Lay, who is the Director of International Affairs for CEFAA. And this is pretty much an exclusive. In fact, General Bermudez said that this interview is given only because Leslie is our spokesperson for UFO media, and she invited Jose Lay to participate. CEFAA tries to keep as low a profile as possible and dedicates itself full-time to our mission. And We do not usually give interviews unless requested by the normal DGAC press department channels. I'm not sure who the DGAC is. However, that's pretty cool that they are allowing us to talk with Jose Lay about the inner workings. So this is more behind the scenes of SEPA and how they work. Jose is the director of international affairs for SEPA, and his job is to work with other countries. So I've talked about this. We've had Antonio Juneas on to talk about this, that other South American countries, especially their government and their military, take the UFO phenomena very seriously, and they do investigations. So he has been reaching out to these different groups so they can work together. Also, because SEPA has a model, they've put together this organization that's very successful. They actually partner up with civilian researchers, including several universities, so that this is a government and, you know, civilian organization. So there's a lot of transparency and people see what's going on. So it's a model that others are trying to adopt, including Argentina, who last year created their own organization. So we'll talk about the details of these South American countries, how SEPA is working with them, and the nature of their research. And so this is really exciting. So we're honored to have him on the show, and this is going to be a lot of fun. So, and he's really been real nice about talking about the Cosmic Exploration Conference, which is, of course, coming up in late October. You could go, early October, the first weekend in October. And, of course, you can go to UFODailyNews.com to see more about that. But Leslie Kane is one of our speakers. We have something like 4 PhDs on the list. We actually have a pretty full list of speakers. It's just I'm waiting to hear confirmation on a couple. But we're going to have, you know, a lot, some scientists and professors. And this is really exciting because I don't think, except for MUFON, like a few years ago, where Leslie Kane actually helped us put that group together, I don't think we've had a bunch of scientists like this together in a long time. Not only that, this is really cool, of course, General De Brouwer from the Belgian Air Force. He's retired now, but many of you know about in the 90s there was a big wave of triangular UFO craft being seen, and they did an investigation. There were police officers, there were lots of credible witnesses, and there was a full-blown investigation done there of all of these sightings. There's a photograph that was taken, pretty incredible photograph, but unfortunately it has been put into question because the person who took the photograph is now saying that he hoaxed it. And up until he said this, his name had remained anonymous, and only people such as General De Brouwer knew his name. And General De Brouwer kept him anonymous because that's what he had asked. So De Brouwer can confirm or deny these claims. So it'll be great to get an update on what's really going on with that picture. But he'll also be able to demonstrate that regardless of this picture, this was an important wave of sightings and all of the other very credible sightings and research that was done there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I've heard from a lot of people. You know, we've got some registrations. I just want to remind you that especially for the dinner is the meet and greet where we're all going to get together. We're going to have dinner, not much interruptions. We're going to have one of the sponsors is going to say hi, and that's about it. So we can really focus on just having fun, talking to each other, lots of mingling going on. So to mingle with all of these scientists and professors and media people, you're going to want to get to the dinner, and that's very limited seating, so be sure and register as soon as possible. UFO Daily News. So let's get into the news that's been out there regarding the unidentified phenomena object, unidentified unidentified flying object phenomena. That's what I meant to say. Beginning with the investigation of the UFO in the Baltic Sea. This is exciting. We talked about this, and when this was announced, it created a lot of excitement, and that was some Swedish treasure hunters had been looking for treasure, of course, and they use this what's called a side-sweeping radar, and I think it kind of drags on the ground and checks stuff out. They were looking for a particular boat when they got this strange anomalous hit, and it's this very large metallic object on the seafloor. They thought, okay, this is definitely a boat of some sort, but then they kept checking it out, and the thing's round, and they're like, wow, this is a solid object. It's got to be a ship of some sort, but it is certainly not wood. It's not like a battleship or any metallic. It's not shaped like a regular ship, and so jokingly, when they got back, they said they found a UFO, and you know, people were on the boat teasing about this. And in the radar scan, you can see this object is mostly circular and looks very much like the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars. I'm sure you're all very familiar with that. And so at first they said, well, you know, it's not that interesting to us, and it's not treasure, so we're not going to be going back. But the media went crazy with it. You know, there's a video on my website from CNN, and all these people started talking about it and made a big deal. And so they came out later on, and I think in January was when they said, okay, yeah, we're going to go check it out because there's been so much interest. Well, they finally put together a group. They've got some scientists, some divers, a bunch of people, and just Friday they set sail to go check this object out. They said they'll be out there for 6 to 10 days. So hopefully, possibly by this time next week, maybe 2 weeks from now, we'll be able to see what they found. Maybe sooner if they have, if they're sending back, they're probably on the internet on the middle of the Baltic Sea. So sending back some information so we can find out more about that. Now, there has been a post that the military is blocking them, but those claims seem to be a bit overblown. Because the story that this assumption comes from talks about everything that's going on, and it says that, interestingly, there are some military operations in the area. And that's all it says, that there are military operations. It doesn't say we're being blocked by the military. Whoever decided to post that link kind of made that assumption that they're being blocked and posted that everywhere, and that's the news going around. But you can go to this link. In fact, somebody posted it on my Facebook here. Darren, thank you, Darren, for posting that. And he's got the actual article. It's a Swedish article. But if you're using like Google Chrome, you can click the little button on top that says it'll translate it, and it will tell you what's going on there. The site is called Aftonbladet, something like that. I'm probably saying it wrong, but that's pretty close, I think. Anyway, this does talk about how Russian and American military in the vicinity is even what it says. There are military exercises in the area, so it doesn't say anybody's being blocked. That would be terrible. But we'll find out more. Maybe they'll come back and say the military drove us out of there, and that would be pretty dang strange, because then people would be like, hey man, what is that thing? So who knows? Secret underground or underwater base, maybe? You know, Dr. Evil style? Who knows what's going on down there? So hopefully we'll find out some more, and it's just really exciting for the prospect that finally we will find out more, and that we will at all, because it was kind of a bummer when people said, you know, they're not going back, and we weren't sure if we're going to ever know what was under the sea. Under the sea. Couple other pieces of news. SETI has said they have listened to signals from GLISA 581. And this is that sun that has some planets around it that are very possibly could have life because they're in this Goldilocks zone where there's probably water and the conditions for life are favorable as they are here on Earth. But they say they haven't heard anything. What does that mean? That just means that, as they've said, you know, for anything to beam radio signals, they would have to send a strong signal towards our planet. You know, the TV signals that we're sending out dissipate, and they're really not going to be very effective for getting out there and other civilizations to pick up. So they're not beaming any radio signals to say hi at us right now. So if there are any civilizations on these planets, who knows? They could, of course, the criticism for SETI is that these technologies that they're utilizing may not be what is being utilized by an advanced spacefaring civilization. Or, of course, SETI's argument is that there is no such thing as traveling these great distances. So there's not going to be any civilization that's flying out here because we live too far away from where they probably are. So they're beaming signals to say hi instead so we can kind of talk like shortwave radio guys, you know, talk but not really meet. That is under debate. And, of course, theoretical physicists such as Michio Kaku believe that if they are, you know, very advanced and they are spacefaring, that one day they probably will understand space and time enough to be able to travel faster than light, bending space, wormholes, warp speed, exciting stuff like that. And of course, you know, I think SpaceX is really exciting because this commercial spacecraft has now gone up, docked with the ISS. The guys were really impressed, the astronauts up there. They said it had a new car smell when they got in and unpacked it. They said, hey, this thing's big. We could definitely be comfortable flying up to the space station and going home in one of these things. So now they'll probably get the contract and move forward. I think they're going to do some more tests where they're going to send non-human supplies up there to the space station and eventually, however, get this thing ready so it can fly humans up there to the International Space Station. And of course, like I told you, I wrote a story a couple weeks ago for both the Huffington Post and for UFODailyNews.com where Bigelow Aerospace is partnered up with SpaceX because they're going to be talking about Bigelow Aerospace putting up a space hotel or at least a space environment that can be leased, and then SpaceX flying people up there to this space lab. How cool is that? So, if you're in the market for a space lab, and you have maybe like, I don't know, you might be able to get one for maybe $500 million or something, maybe less, maybe $100 million. You know, if you mention the show, you get 10% off. Tell them that. But get your own space station up there and SpaceX will fly you out there on their Dragon spacecraft. How cool is that? The Dragon spacecraft. Good marketing there. Cool names. Dragon spacecraft is definitely a much cooler name than GLESA 581. Dragon 581. That would have been cool. Without further ado, there's more news out there, but I want to get into this interview. I just actually did this interview the other day, and we went pretty long because Jose has a lot of really interesting things to say. So let's listen to Jose Lay and Leslie Kane. Leslie Kane. Okay, I have my wonderful guests on the line. I'm very excited to have our good friend, Leslie Kane, on the phone, author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. I think one of the most important books out there, personally. And then also, this is very exciting to have Jose Lay, who is the Director of International Affairs for the CEFAA organization, and that's the Chilean organization looking into aerial anomalies. So thank you both for joining me.
Great to be with you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'd just like to say, Alejandro, you mentioned the Chilean organization. Just to clarify that this is actually an official research group that's part of the aviation branch of the government in Chile. So it's the official group that we're dealing with here.
Right, yeah. We've talked about them a lot on the show, of course, because it's really exciting, and we've talked about the general speaking at the Congress, and then also General Bermudez having the press conference where he talked about the sighting in Santiago that got a lot of press. And one reason it got a lot of press is a story that you wrote, Leslie, for the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm. And I did a follow-up as well, and the case is still being further investigated, so there will be another story coming down the pike. And also, I'm going actually to Chile next week on Thursday as a guest of the CEFAA, so I will be learning a lot more when I'm there.
Great. On that story, I did want to mention, just because I find this always to be the case, unfortunately, the reaction to your story was interesting because there were some follow-up by, for example, I know Benjamin Radford was one of those people to follow up, questioning the kind of the veracity of the story and the sighting, but they never include all of the facts of the story. He certainly didn't. And, I mean, did you know if any of these people contacted you or General Bermudez?
Well, none of them contacted me, I can tell you that. And I noticed a number of the reports they published, there were actual misstatements in them. I mean, factual inaccuracies that they wrote. And they just sort of did these cursory looks at the video footage and came to these conclusions that were not, you know, a result of the kind of investigation that is required to really make determinations about this stuff. So I just didn't pay a lot of attention to it, and we are now, you know, involved with a much more in-depth investigation of these videos, and there will be more information coming out about it later.
Yeah, when we want to get a lot more into South American countries and their studies in this arena, but one question I wanted to follow up on that is, why do you think that is? I mean, we really saw this with the Chinese sighting where they shut down the airport for a period of time, and there were these YouTube videos, and MSNBC and everybody's posting these YouTube videos that had nothing to do with this story. One of them was of a rocket over a Russian or Eastern European country, and I wonder, why don't you think, I mean, this is major mass media. Why do you think they don't feel like they have to do their research or due diligence around these UFO reports as like they would normally have to do?
Are you talking about media now, or are you talking about sort of individual
media.
Skeptics? Yeah, I mean, I just can't answer that. I mean, I don't think that the media, you know, they like to do sort of fluff stories on this. I mean, they get an assignment and they do something really fast, and they try to be sensational to get people to look at it, but you know, you just don't see a lot of serious investigation going on in the media, unfortunately, around this topic. And I'm sure part of that is because of the ridicule that the topic carries, and it just isn't taken seriously enough. So that's a problem. But I think overall that problem is improving. I think mm-hmm. we've got better reporting going on in the media. I think there's more reporting. And overall, at least from the time that I started doing this and over, you know, about 12 years ago, things have definitely improved. So I try to look at the bigger picture and, you know, hope that we're moving in the right direction at least.
Mm-hmm. Moving in the right direction, I think, would be moving towards what some countries in South America are doing, such as Chile. And that's where you come in, Jose. And that is, for instance, the organization CEFAA, where there's actually official research going on. Can you tell us about how CEFAA got started and how the government has kind of viewed what you all do there?
Well, CEFAA came into being after a series of happening sightings during the 70s. I think that's the word for it. And they were so obvious. They were not only registered by pilots and air controllers, but actually by the public, who actually was very concerned about this sort of sighting. And the DGAC took the initiative and decided to form a group of investigation that began very modestly and that developed to what CEFA is now. We are an organization that covers every area of the activities of the country, actually, because we supply the public in general with information, and we obtain at the same time information from the public, but especially from the armed forces, all of them, each branch of the Air Force, and airlines through the DGAC, and we also do our work of analysis with close cooperation of, at the moment, 5 universities, at least, in the country. So that is just about, the, in general terms, how our organization is at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So the work has been going on for a while. It seems that, and maybe it was just because of the news it got, it didn't seem like really we had a whole lot of news about CEFA-A and what was going on until late 2010, and I think that had to do with the book by Rodrigo Bravo coming out, and that seemed to kind of get a lot of news going and a lot more stories coming about. Did that help? Did his book help kind of increase the level of work being done out there in CEFA, or had you all just been working hard at this for a long time?
No, not at all. Our work has been constant and without actually any change at all after the publication of that book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of the book that you are referring to. The fact is that the phenomena in Chile is looked upon, like all over South America, in a natural way. For that, I mean that it is not something so extraordinary to the population at large.
Mm-hmm.
So we are ready to accept the existence, I mean, the existence of the phenomenon. Therefore, the reports of sightings is usually just about the same. Now, it has been increasing since the 70s, of course, even perhaps dramatically in the last 2 years, but that is not because of the publication of any book at all. If anything, if I would mention a book, I would mention Leslie King's book.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that is that really marked, I think, the history of UFO publications.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, she brought a lot of things to light with her book. That's why, you know, I love her work. But, yeah, you know, had it heard. It was just exciting, I think, on our end to see not just, of course, Leslie's book with Bermudez, but also to see then Rodrigo Bravo. It was interesting for us, I guess, in America, and I don't know about you, Leslie, you might have had more insight. But it seemed like, at least on our end, there wasn't as much insight into that. There was so much activity going on officially in South America until your book, and then Rodrigo's book also helped kind of bring that to our attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true that not enough attention has been focused on South America. And, you know, a lot of these agencies have been doing their work for many years, and I think one of the things I really want to do now is draw more attention to South America, and that was, I did it somewhat in my book, but you know, there's a lot more going on than what I was able to cover in the book, and I just think, you know, that is the area now where a lot of really important things are developing, and I think that the SEPA-A is kind of at the heart of creating a more unified situation throughout all of South America where different countries work together, and I think maybe Jose could talk a little bit about that, but I think we're going to be seeing a lot more, a lot more reporting, at least from me, on South America and on the activities of the SEPA-A. So we'll learn more about it. But maybe Jose would like to talk about sort of the effort they're making now to bring together the work of a lot of different countries into a more unified sort of organization of involving a whole group of countries down there. Do you want to talk about that, Jose?
Well, yes. We have signed an agreement with, for example, CRIDOBNI of Uruguay, which is the official organization investigating the phenomenon in Uruguay that depends from the Uruguayan Air Force. Now, this organization, CRIDOBNI, is the oldest official organization, and we did copy from them several aspects of their type of organization. And we also are in contact with Brazil, who also has dedicated an Air Force group to the study of the phenomena. Argentina also has lately named a committee of studies. Peru, Ecuador. We also have relations with France, with private investigators of 15 countries about, including the United States. And we are very slowly coming to conform a group of investigation that not only cover one country area, because this phenomena is actually a worldwide one. You know, I guess every country has its own rate of sightings, and we should make an international effort to actually unite our efforts to find out exactly the nature of this phenomenon in a serious and scientific way.
Now, I want to get more into the individual countries, but one question I wanted to ask, you know, Leslie and I were talking a little bit about our media and not necessarily taking it as serious always as maybe it should be done. Is South America different, I guess, especially in Chile? Does your media take this topic more seriously, you think?
I mean, in comparison to other countries?
Yeah, or do they make fun of it? Are their stories typically kind of a tongue-in-cheek where they've always got to crack a joke every time they cover a story?
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you an example, we have a case in which the first people to see the phenomena, to place it that way, is the controller of one of our main airfields here, who in turn consults the crew of an incoming commercial plane, who at the same time also is watching the same phenomenon that the people at the tower is seeing. And finally, you know, it turned out that there are three crews, air crews in total, watching this phenomena, and the crews of two control towers of two different airports.
Wow.
So you have at least 20 or 30 people who have seen the same phenomenon. Now, I think it will be a little bit difficult to build up a joke on such type of sighting. I mean, I would have a lot of trouble trying to imagine a joke on so many people, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
To doubt about so many valuable and reliable witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a very difficult thing to make a joke out of it. We have several examples, you know, not only one. So the subject is, in at least in our country, is not material for joke making.
Right, and I chuckled a little bit there because, you know, I'll feel the same way. Well, there'll be an incredible case or happening or talk being done by someone, and it's like, well, how can they joke about this? But the media is somehow often able to somehow throw in a joke or something, even in important events, and it can be really frustrating. So it's wonderful to hear that they don't do that out there.
Perhaps they would like to, but you are unable to do such a thing like that in view of the quality of the witnesses and the seriousness of the event.
Right.
Yeah, could I interject here, Alejandro?
Definitely. You know, whenever you have something to add, go ahead.
I just like to, you know, highlight the point. I mean, it's excellent that the media takes it more seriously, but I think what's also really interesting about a case like the one Jose just described is the fact that all the people involved immediately file reports. It's not like here where everybody's afraid to talk about it. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, not one witness in all of O'Hare Airport incident would talk about it publicly, et cetera. In their country, I mean, maybe Jose can explain the process, because I think it's really important to highlight the fact that you have these five different, you know, you have two radar stations and three aircraft that saw this thing. And all these reports were filed and there was no hesitation about doing so. It's part of the everyday automatic process that goes on there. Isn't that correct, Jose? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the process is for the people that, like if you're a pilot and you witness something, what happens?
Oh, yes. Yes, well, I can illustrate that with an example. On March 21st or something like that, an army airplane had a sighting at the north of Chile at about 1 a.m. in the morning during an exercise, a military exercise. They were dropping
parachuters.
Yep, you got it.
Parachuters. Yes, and the pilot of that plane reported to the control tower. Now, after landing, the pilot filed the necessary form, you know, report form, that is immediately directed to CFAA. But at the same time, the control tower also filed another form, which is especially directed to controllers, air controllers, and radar controllers, get another form that also arrived to CFAA. So by 8:30 a.m. The same day, we had the two reports in our office. We had the report from the pilot and the report of the control tower. And by the afternoon, we had the actual recording of the tape of the conversation that went on between the pilot and the control tower. So the process is very, very fast.
And then you follow up and you usually interview the people involved.
Yes.
But it's very fast and it's just automatic. It's part of the system. It happens in every place throughout the country. It's the same process, right?
Exactly. There are about 50 or so airports along the country, and all of them follow the same procedure. Mm-hmm. And the pilots here of every airline, you know, they are aware of this report form that they have to fill up in case of any happening during their flight. You see, so we don't have problems of obtaining information, official information that way. Mm. And the pilots, I must say, nobody is afraid of filling up such forms, because the subject, I repeat, is taken seriously.
Right, which is so important. I mean, it's a cultural difference that unfortunately is a huge hurdle out here, but isn't out there, so you're able to get some real data and probably do a lot more discovery than we're able to do out here.
Well, in that sense, I think we are at an advantage, you see,
mm-hmm.
Because we have the cooperation of everyone involved, the serious cooperation of everyone involved.
Right.
And the subject is not taken lightly. We have done conferences in universities, middle schools, even to primary schools along the country. And I can tell you the new generation of children or young people, they take this phenomenon as it is. A real, the existence of it is real and it is accepted.
Wow. I hope we get there at some point. And that's what's kind of frustrating about our country is we're certainly, you know, and this is reiterated in many different topics, but we're so American or U.S. centric. And we kind of look down upon other countries, but there are so many other things, examples like this, where other countries are way ahead of us.
An important point, and that's one of the reasons I'm going down there next week, Alejandro, is so that I can really get a close-up look at how this agency operates and do interviews with a lot of people involved, so that I can bring back information that I think might be able to be used as a model to the possibility of forming and something like this in this country, or at least to be used as a way of influencing government officials here to show them how something like this can actually work and how it operates in some place where it's useful and successful. And so
right.
I think it's a really important thing for me to learn more about what's going on there for that reason.
Yeah, that's great. So, Jose, speaking about the U.S., you know, and your organization and how you've been able to do this work and get this down, have you all tried to interface with the American military or U.S. military, and what reaction have you got, if so?
I'm afraid that we tried to do so in the past, and actually we did cooperate in the Project Blue Book, I think it was, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We presented some material, a very important material of a very important case that happened to some scientists in the Antarctic continent during the Geophysical International Year, but we never heard of the result of that cooperation from the authorities that received the material. So the cooperation between the, shall we say, the two countries ceased from that moment on. But at that time there was no CFAR, of course, in those years. Now, we will be happy to cooperate with any official organization in the United States, of course, very, very happy to do so.
Right.
But that will have to be like we have been doing it always, openly and without any, let's say, secrecy about it. Because there is no point on keeping things secret in these matters any longer.
Mm-hmm.
At least we look at this subject that it is so normal, you know, that it doesn't require any sort of being much too careful about, excepting, of course, from some media, you know, that actually use the subject just to, I don't know, to publish whatever. You must be more aware than I do that there is a serious press and there's other sort of press that is not serious at all.
Right.
On this subject.
Right.
But instead of helping, you know, they hinder the serious investigation and they make scientists around the world shrink from doing actual serious research.
Right. Now, on that case in Chile, or the Antarctic case that you talked about, that you cooperated with the Blue Book, do you remember any details of that case?
I think the person that's more qualified to do this, you have it right here, Leslie King. You know?
All right,
he knows
great.
About,
no,
he knows about that.
Jose, I'm not qualified to talk about it. I mean, all I know is that there were some scientists that were doing research in Antarctica, and they had some very, very startling and clear sightings of a kind of I believe it was like a cylinder type object that just sat around for a long period of time, and they got very excellent photographs of it.
Yes,
and when they
right.
met with the U.S. official after they came back to the continent, you know, and a U.S. official met with them and asked them for the photographs and took them. And unfortunately, these individuals didn't make copies of them. That's the sad part of this. I mean, it was back in the early days when they didn't have the technology. It certainly, you know, they were just hard copy, probably slides or something like that. But they didn't make any copies because they were told, as I think I'm correct in saying, that they were told that the photos would be returned to them.
Yes.
And, you know, the U.S. government just wanted to do some research on them. And they never heard from the government again and never got their photographs back. That's the bottom line. Am I correct, Jose?
Yes, that's right.
So that's basically right. The case. And Jose has actually sent me, it's one of the cases I want to possibly do a story about. He has sent me some really interesting information about it and some documents and some of the letters. I think it was a letter that the U.S. government official wrote in requesting the information. I just haven't had time to really go through it carefully, but I would like to, you know, write a story about it and let everybody know about it because it's very interesting since it does involve our government once again receiving information, as we've heard so many times in the past, and then not returning it to the person from who they received it.
Right. And this probably was then in the 40s?
No, was it 50s or 60s, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It was during the time of Project Blue Book, anyway.
Gotcha.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, it sounds like an incredible case, so we'll have to look forward to that. But I did want to ask some more. You had spoken, Jose, about Uruguay and how when you started CEPHA, looked to them and some of what they had done. Now, do they have their own official organization, or is it their Air Force that looks into the phenomena?
Yes. The organization is called Quiv OVNI. It belongs to the Air Force.
Okay.
But it operates together with the civilian investigators on the subject. And they also have the cooperation of some scientists and from the civilian aviation related people. But that is the oldest, the first really official organization that was set up in South America to investigate the phenomenon. You see, that is the value that Crisomi has in this sense. We have the advantage over Crisomi in the fact that we grew up further. We involved many universities. We involved the private airlines, the commercial airlines, and all the other forces. Not only the Air Force is cooperating with us. We have the Navy, the police corps, and the army, you know, air branches that are closely cooperating with that. They have a liaison officer of high rank that reports anything that happened within that particular arm branch to that report to directly to us, to CFAA. So anything that happened in Chile, we are bound to know it one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible to hear all that organization.
And the information arrives very quickly, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Brazil now. Brazil is the same rank, or Brazil's a little different in that they, as far as I know, they don't have an official organization, but their Air Force does do some investigation. And I remember, I think it was last year that they released some of their files.
Yes. Now, Brazil is a very, is a special case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have some very dramatic experiences in Brazil, especially in one called Operación Prato, that is supposed to be for Operation Sosa or something like that, in which the Air Force was directly involved. And they set up a special committee of research on that subject. We are in close contact with them through the Air Force attaché at the embassy, Brazilian embassy here in Chile. Now, they are really investigating very seriously the phenomenon, but so far they have not come to form a group, a mixed group, civilian and military group, as CFAA has, but they are in the process of doing it. For them, it is a little bit more difficult because the country is it is a really big country over there,
mm-hmm.
Brazil, and there are so many. I think they have too many candidates in this sense for actually making a group such as CFAA. But eventually they'll come to it. They are in the process of coming out with something very, very interesting in the very near future.
Mm-hmm. And Argentina just created an organization, right, like that. Have you been helping them?
Yes, definitely. We are in touch with them. Now, Argentina is coming out straight with trying to form a group very similar to CFAA from the beginning, not limited to the military only. Now, they started already cooperating with the local very serious and prestigious investigators they have there, and together they started to establish the base, their basis of operating there. They are in that process now, and we are cooperating with them in that sense. You know, there are some details in every organization when you are just beginning to establish it, from which you can actually benefit from other organizations that already have been operating for quite some time. There are a lot of details, you know, on how to come out of it. For example, we avoided a lot of trial and error experiences,
mm-hmm.
by consulting with the Uruguayans on the subject, you see. And the Argentinians are doing the same thing. They're consulting us, and we are advising them on according to our experience. But they are coming out very strong, I can tell you that.
Yeah. It's all so exciting. And then Peru, because you had mentioned Peru, do they have an official organization, or is this, again, just kind of a committee of their Air Force?
They have an Air Force committee.
Okay.
An Air Force committee there. And but they're on a standby basically. They're sitting back and watching how the Argentinians are developing, for example, I think in order to make their move in a similar way. I think this sort of mixed organization, military and civilians, in which the civilian part can support us with the scientists, you know, the university laboratories, you know, there is a huge amount of knowledge that can be used by us in the investigation, plus the effort and the facilities the armed forces have, you know, to cover a whole area of a country, especially the air forces, for example, that they are covering the airspace because of their natural role. That facilitates things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very advantageous to have the cooperation of everyone in this sense.
Right. And then last, that you know, you had mentioned Ecuador also. Are they a committee or do they have a more advanced?
It's an Air Force.
Okay.
It's Air Force, definitely, Ecuador. But also they are in close touch with the private investigators, too, in their own country. It is open. The main point is that although the organizations are within an armed service, the organization is open up to
right.
to the public in general, like we are here in Chile.
Which is a great model. It seems so important because then it's a group effort. There is more transparency, and the public doesn't get this idea that, oh, you know, this is just done. For instance, with the UK and them releasing their files and a lot of people feeling, oh, you know, this isn't a genuine effort. This is just to appease the public. By involving the public like you all do, the public gets to truly feel involved and understand that this is a credible, real effort.
Alejandro, perhaps you can tell me the logic or the logic of a sighting, for example. If a civilian sees a phenomenon which is corroborated by other civilians and they come to CFAA with the report and we start to investigate and find out that the reliability of the witnesses is really good, you know, they are credible people, you see. We cannot by any means monopolize this knowledge who actually doesn't belong to us. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean the phenomenon is there.
Right.
It exists. It is not a private property of any government or any armed service.
Mm-hmm.
This is a worldwide phenomenon that eventually won't be able to it is so open.
Yeah.
Our cases are so clear, so hard, that it is impossible to try to hide the information. And in the end, account what for?
Yeah, I think this
what
philosophy.
Be the use of it?
Mm-hmm. This philosophy that you're stating is so enlightened. I think it is so logical. It makes sense to the way it should be. And it makes me feel like, you know, especially coming back to our government and our world, it's like in the dark ages in a way compared to not being to this place that you just mentioned, because that makes sense. It's sharing the information. It's for everyone, especially if it's generated from the civilian population. So it's wonderful to hear you say that, and I would be incredible if we had something similar here.
It would be wonderful, actually. It would be wonderful.
It would be.
Because, the United States is with the resources and the means, you know, available, it would, you know, they would mean a real major step forward worldwide, you know. That would be a fantastic news, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that in the very near future, it will come to pass.
Yeah.
I'm confident of that. I'm quite confident on that.
Well, yes. Good. I hope you're right. What about Mexico? Mexican military doesn't seem to be opposed to looking into the matter, at least thinking of like Campeche, where they came forward with that sighting and what had happened there. Have you all worked with them? Are they interested in creating an organization similar to CEFA?
I think Mexico is altogether another thing. Mexico, actually, we regard Mexico as part of North America. You know, they are North, Central, and South America. We are focused at this moment more in South America, but as far as I know, the Mexican armed services, I'm not so sure whether each of the branches of the services there have their committee of studies or not. I have heard of some efforts from the Mexican Air Force to do something, but I'm not up to date on that. That's called. I know very little about Mexico.
You had also mentioned France, and in France they have JEPAN. And besides you all, they're another shining example of, I think, this sort of research done right. It sounds like you work with them fairly closely also.
Yes, we are working with France. And France is altogether another thing since the Cometa report was released in that country. And on this Cometa report score, I think a more qualified person than I am is Leslie King again, you know.
Here we go again.
Who knows much more about that than myself.
I don't think the Cometa report is really what the question is about. I mean, that came out in, I think it was 1999, and of course was a very, very significant report by a group of retired military in France and kind of got a lot of attention to the country because of it. But I think, Alejandro's really interested in is what the relationship is now between the French official agency and the official agency in Chile.
Well, anyway, the relationship is a very close one. We do exchange information. As I said before, our information is open. You know, anyone can come to visit CEFA and have access to all our files. Now, with the French, we do have information. They are backing us up also with their lab facilities. And the exchange is very fluent, and it has been so from the very beginning. In France, there is also the same point of view we have on the phenomenon. It is there, it exists, and deserves to be investigated, but openly and seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to follow up on the Cometa report and JEPAN to Leslie, you know, I know Cometa was a really big influence for you, and that organization or what they do there is really important. Leslie, if you could talk about, you know, the importance of like JEPAN and the South American organizations, and why maybe you think we don't have that here yet in the United States.
Well, that second part's a hard one, but
right.
I think, certainly we can see from what Jose has just said that, you know, South America is really sort of on the forefront now of studying this issue in terms of, you know, there being so many countries that are involved. And, France has been, I wrote in my book about a number of people from the French agency who contributed because they have been, their official agency has been on this since the 70s. So they're, you know, been doing it for decades. And I've also been there and have visited with the officials from JEPAN and have corresponded with them for a while. And, you know, they have released their files. And their agency is located within the equivalent of our NASA in France. So it's also interesting to me to see all the different official places that these agencies can exist. So there's a lot of options as to where, you might set up an official agency and what the focus of that agency might be. In some countries, they're concerned more about aviation safety issues, and that's sort of the mission as to why they exist. In others, it's purely scientific, and I think in France, it's definitely, they were set up as a scientific agency interested in just investigating these cases for the sake of pure science. I think in Chile, they're more focused on safety issues and other countries as well. So, I think it's all of these agencies are real models for what should happen in the United States. And as to why it hasn't happened here, I mean, that's a really, really complicated question. Of course, we had Project Blue Book that closed down in early 1970. We've had no official involvement with the issue since then, at least, you know, any kind of acknowledged official involvement. We've certainly had in cases which have been documented officially, in which government officials have been interested in them, enough to document them. But beyond that, it's sort of, a lot of people think there's a secret project going on and black projects and all of this, and I don't really, you know, have a lot of hard evidence to support that. But I'm hoping that it will change, and I'm really working hard. In fact, it's one of the main reasons I wrote my book, was to try to have it be useful as a tool, to try to get something going in the United States. And I am working behind the scenes with well-placed people who do support the idea in the political world. Right now, we're sort of on hold because of the elections. I have to wait until after the elections to kind of take the next steps. But in the meantime, I want to learn more about what these other agencies are doing so that they can be used, as I said, to influence our country in, you know, changing there. Even if, and you know, Alejandro, even just having one staff person somewhere, one person to kind of be a coordinator on this topic would change everything. Mm-hmm. And it really, you know, I want to hold on to the vision, as impossible as it seems, but I do hold the vision that it's not impossible and that it is something that we can bring about. And I've gotten enough positive support for this process from people I've worked with in Washington who are influential to believe that it's a possibility that it really can happen. So, you know, just to ask for the smallest little thing that doesn't cost a lot, and maybe we'll see that happen in the next few years. I hope so.
Alejandro.
Uh-huh.
May I say a word on this topic? I think everything reduces itself to lack of information. Hmm. I mean, the more information the public has about the seriousness of this subject is the better. That's why, for example, I told you we are holding conferences and talks in universities, in schools, in hospitals even, you know, the psychiatric hospitals of the armed services and things like that, so that the people involved at every level of education can take this subject matter seriously. And hence, for example, one of the results here is that any pilot reporting an anomalous sighting is taken seriously and is not being made fun of, even by the psychologists here, who are also taking the subject seriously, because we have given them conferences on the subject, backed up by our own scientists, so that the, you know, between pairs, they do tend to take each other more seriously than just knowing things through the media. For example, the so-called ufologists, you know, that are dealing more with a show rather than an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for Leslie, for example, has told me about your beginning to organize a conference on this subject, a serious conference involving serious investigators and scientists there in the United States. I would like to congratulate you on this, because these efforts like the one that you are doing now on this conference, that open up the road to us, you know, to become what we are now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're, your conference, I think it is a major happening, you know, in your country, and I wish you every success on it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, well, thank you so very much for mentioning the conference and for saying that, because it's very humbling to have you do that. It's a great honor to have you say that, because, yeah, I think you all have done a great job in creating a space, a serious, credible space for credible researchers and scientists to go to take a serious look at the subject. And I don't know that we have that here in the United States, so that's why I created the conference to do that. You know, one, you talked about getting information out to the public, credible information for educators, and that's what's great about Leslie's book, because Leslie's book is one of those things. It has this information that people can use to educate everyone. So now I think we need that space. And what's wonderful about Leslie going out on top of that to investigate what you all are doing out there is it does give me hope, because I think you made an interesting point there, Leslie, in that JPON is part of their kind of like NASA, mm-hmm. whereas CEFAA is part of their FAA, where there are these different perspectives and ways to look at tackling the issue, and one or both could do it. And if coupled with, like what you're talking about, Jose, this civilian component to make sure that it's very transparent and that there's interaction with the public, that is a model that could certainly work here, I think. And I can't see people having too much argument with creating such a group or even a desk like you're talking about, Leslie. So it gives me hope, because you guys have done this. It's a model that Leslie can research and take back to her friends who are officials, and hopefully we can get something then done here in the United States.
Yeah. Right on, Alejandro.
So, thank you, Jose.
I agree on that too, Alejandro. You are at least really, really in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the conference, it's an important point about the conference that Alejandro is organizing, is that it actually brings this subject into a scientific context, because this is basically a scientific conference in which there are going to be scientists speaking who have nothing to do with the UFO subject. Mm-hmm. But we're going to bring UFOs into the whole issue of the search for extraterrestrial life and the exploration of space and all that is the appropriate context for the subject matter when it is studied and presented properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think if we move more and more in that direction, we're, you know, it's going to change the way the subject is understood by the scientific community, and I think that's why what you're doing, Alejandro, at this conference is really important. It's really a breakthrough.
And I hope that it can help to network some people together, so if, you know, the idea is entertained to create a CEFAA type of group here, that then we can look towards this networking of people that we've gotten together with, like this conference, as these serious people who can be involved with, professors, aiding in such a group.
Absolutely. You've got a very important point. Yeah.
In the last few minutes, Jose, I wanted to ask you about how you got involved with CEFAA and what has inspired you to do this work.
You mean in a personal way?
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, my relation with the phenomena is of a very long data, actually. I had my own personal experience on this, and I started to study the subject since I was very young, actually. And gradually, I accumulated a certain amount of knowledge, and I started to relate myself with people that share this interest on the subject. And my coming into CEFAA was like a very normal, you know, further step in what has become my life now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a process that I feel it a very normal process that has to become. That's all, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm in charge of the international affairs of CFAA because I have taken some pains to study the phenomenon situation in other countries, and I have a certain facility for some languages, though I have to excuse myself, of course, for my English, that is not actually as fluent as I would like it to be. But that's just about it, you know. It came from a personal experience and for a desire to know the truth out of it.
And as far as, you know, working with all the groups that you do, what has been perhaps one of the most incredible cases that you ran across? Maybe do you have one in particular that really sticks with you? Maybe there's been a couple, but could you tell us about one of those cases?
No, I could not, because it's not only one case that actually has amazed me or keeps me awake sometimes at night. Mm-hmm. We have several cases at CFAA. The problem is that we are not an organization that goes around publishing everything, because we will not have time for it.
Right.
We don't have the personnel either. But if you look into our files, you will come out across some very interesting cases that are unique. And, I could say, for example, that it impressed me, Operation Prato in Brazil. It impressed me what happened in Belgium. There are a couple of French cases that happened in the Sahara Desert that are very impressive, too. Present every major aspect to make you actually believe that the phenomenon does exist. I'm not sure whether I'm explaining myself well in this sense. I take a sighting, for example, as valuable as it convinces me of the fact that the phenomenon is actually there. Because of the quality of the witnesses, because of the circumstances, and so on and so forth, you see? And of that sort of examples, we got many of them.
Not well, then, do you want to talk a little about the one where they described the object that looked like a train with windows? Because I know you've been doing some more research on that one recently.
Yes, we are reviving a case that happened in 1979, in which the control towers of two airports saw an object apparently moving at a certain speed that is not normal for conventional aircraft to do so. The controllers knew that some other commercial aircraft were flying in the vicinity of it, near what the happening was going on, and they consulted the pilots, and as a result of it, we got the reports of three commercial air pilots and the two towers, plus one radar contact, you see, and one of the pilots described the object he saw as a train with many lights, you know. And this description is corroborated by another commercial pilot who has this object, you know, flying alongside him for quite some time. And he saw it and he described it in detail, you see. And that is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think, Alejandro? I think it is really impressive.
It's very, I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, I know from looking at the CFAA site, you do, like you said, you have a lot of incredible cases like this with very credible witnesses, pilots, control tower people, military And I know you've got a few at the website, but there are so many that I can understand your answer. That because my answer would probably be very similar, is that it's hard to pin down just one because there are just so many.
Yes, it's impossible to pin down just one.
Mm-hmm.
That is impossible, really. But and now we come to this. If you have more than 20 people, almost 30 people, that are pilots, usually our pilots, you know, they are 20-20 eyesight people. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps one of them might have seen a vision, two of them perhaps the same vision. The three of the people in the cabin, perhaps they had a collective vision, right? But if you take the other aircraft, where there are three trained people, three other professionals, seeing the same phenomenon, would you call it a collective vision? And yet a third airplane with another crew of three, you know, on board of trained professional people seeing exactly the same phenomena, will it still be a collective vision?
Mm-hmm.
And if you sum up the controllers, the air traffic controllers on a airfield that are seeing exactly the same vision, would you call that still a collective vision? Just they are seeing nonsense, and yet another control tower confirms that, and the radar operator of another place in a radar station says, yes, it is there. Then I don't know how to call that. I will be really complicated to call it a collective vision. They all went to the same party or whatever, you know. And I'm referring especially to a certain group of people you have in the United States. I think you call them debunkers or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like one of your best debunkers to debunk this sort of sighting, for example.
Right.
And state after that the phenomenon does not exist.
Right.
But I want answers from them, real answers, mm-hmm. not just opinions.
Now, one last question, and I agree with you, and unfortunately, yeah, that's the way it gets frustrating. They don't do their homework and even include all the evidence often in their responses.
We had to fight against that for a long, long time, Alejandro. And you have to be able to go get over them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of people will always exist. We still have them in our country, you see. But that is one of the main barriers between serious educators and educating the people. I have one of my grandchildren here.
Uh-oh.
I think he's in big trouble. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Leslie, perhaps you could help me on this. You know,
you better do you have to go take care of him?
Sebastian, no, he's here now with me.
Good.
You know, and that would be my resume, Alejandro, on this topic.
One last question, because we're about out of time, is with all of this investigation and data that you have there at CEFA, do you all have any conclusions that you've come to, or any maybe working hypothesis that you've come to in what you see here, such as patterns or answers as to the nature of the phenomenon?
Oh, yes. We have, apart from the fact, of course, that we have to study every case that seems to deserve a study. Now, apart from that, we have seen many birds, many bugs, many you can finally, you know, close up into certain conclusions that are valid. You know, there have been some balloons and things like that, the usual kind of thing. The 95% that Mr. Michio Kaku mentions, you know, all the time, you know, the 95% that is perfectly explainable. You understand what I mean?
Uh-huh.
We have to work on and spend time on those cases too. Even if we reach that conclusion, you see, at the beginning you are never sure. You see, that is time consuming. But there is the other 5% that put us into trouble, and for that there are several theories about it. I think the people in our scientific committee, you know, could explain you better than I do the things like that. But they are the usual theories that physicists are beginning to develop now. You see, concerning other dimensions, travels in time, and things like that. You see, but it is really fascinating. Anyway, the whole process. I think I find it even sometimes more fascinating than the final result that perhaps we all of us suspect or feel that it is likely to be.
Well, speaking of fascinating, it has been fascinating speaking with you today, Jose. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great pleasure. And thank you, Leslie, as always. It's wonderful to work with you, and so great you're going to be going to Chile. You must be really excited about that.
I'm very excited. Yeah, next Thursday I'm off, so, and I'll be there for almost 3 weeks, so I'm really looking forward to it.
We're looking forward to meeting Leslie, too, I assure you. She's going to be most welcome, really. Mm-hmm.
And I think they've even labeled you as their official U.S. spokesperson.
Yes. Leslie CEFA. Kane is actually the official spokesperson of CEFA for the United States media.
Oh, that's great.
We derive all the information that's required from us through her, because we think she's the person that agrees with that, in the sense that her seriousness, her objectivity, you know, on the subject is she is the person that we really needed to cover, you know, the need to inform the American public.
Yep. Well, I think you made a great choice there.
I'm sure.
Thank you. Thank you, both of you.
No,
you're welcome. Talk about me like I'm not even there. Like I'm not sitting here listening.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. We're out of time, but thank you. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Hopefully, we'll stay in contact.
Thank you, Alejandro.
Thanks. Thank you, Alejandro. Bye-bye.
All right. What a great interview. I had so much fun talking to him and getting more details about that organization, and it was a rare opportunity. So very grateful to have him on the line. And DGAC, by the way, I couldn't remember what the acronym meant, but he referred to it often, and that is that FAA-like organization for Chile. Their title is essentially the Department of Civil Aeronautics. And you can go to Leslie Kane's site, UFOsOnTheRecord.com, click on the research link at the top of the page, and you're going to see a bunch of CEFA investigations, including a lot of videos, which are actual correspondence from pilots at the time of their sightings, and their videos, because they are subtitled in English, so you can get the sense of the excitement, you know, and the voice of the air traffic controllers and the pilots as these things happened. So very exciting stuff. Great interview. It was really exciting and a lot of fun to have him on there, and I really want to thank Leslie for arranging that. Also, next week, we're going to have a lot of fun as well. I've got scheduled Randall Nickerson, and he has done a documentary that is not out yet, but that he's working on the Rua case. So John Mack, who is a psychologist who did a lot of research into this field, of course, went out to South Africa and investigated this incredible case where these school children all said that they saw this craft land and this entity was there. And he has interviewed these children who are now teenagers, and he says their stories are really the same and pretty incredible. So It's going to be a lot of fun to talk to Randy next week, so be sure to join us. Until then, have a good week, and don't forget to visit UFODailyNews.com for all of the latest in UFO happenings. Thanks, people. Talk to you next week.